I'll switch to English if that's okay. Did I lose someone yet? Okay, that's okay. My name is Dandy. I'm the technical product manager within Microsoft Corporate, focusing on data warehousing, with my core focus on our latest product technology, which is called SQL Server Parallel Data Warehouse. I like this session a lot because, it's a full house. That's really nice. Even have people standing in the back. There's a seat up here if you want one. The way I want to do this session is I really want to have this session open for a lot of questions as well, because I know there's a lot of questions around data warehousing specifically, and what is Microsoft doing, or what are you currently doing with data warehousing? So that's the kind of things I want to figure out from you. As I said, if you want to ask questions in English, French, German, Dutch, Flemish, feel free to do so. Other language? not in Fries, but if there are any questions for the recording purposes, I will then translate the question into English and respond in English as well. But that's okay with everyone. So what are we trying to do with Microsoft Data Warehousing? First of all, we want to make SQL Server the fastest, most affordable database for customers of all sizes. And I think that's very important, and a very important statement to make. It's the four customers of all sizes. What I'm going to show you is the way we offer Microsoft Data Warehousing and how to implement Microsoft Data Warehousing. What are the capabilities? What are the methods? But also want to talk about the flexibility and choice you have to build out the complete data warehousing solution, how it fits in within the Microsoft product stack. And I'll gladly answer any kind of questions that you might have in relationship to what is Microsoft doing differently from our competitors in the area. Okay. Key goal and key purpose is to have simplified data warehouse management, but the key comment and the key goal I have there is to bring you the entire offering that we have and position it correctly. The thing is, if you have a lot of offerings, it's very important to fix them and position them correctly. It's easier to say, no, we are this database company, and what we're going to do is offer you a high-end solution because that's the right answer for everything, right? I did hear a comment on that. Okay. So this is my personal statement. Data warehousing offerings that support customer needs for dedicated workloads, performance, scalability, with a choice of hardware, but also with a choice of architecture. Okay. So what are your challenges nowadays when it comes to data warehousing, when it comes to, storing large amounts of data? One of the challenges is that nowadays people have the desire for real-time analytics. I want to know today immediately how many people are in my session. Okay, if I want to do that and then do some prediction on how many people are going to be in the next session, I need to get all that data, store it, and start analyzing, which is like basically real-time analysis. I think the time that we were looking for data warehousing or analytical solutions where your reporting or your analysis will take days and days and days stored in an offline data warehouse, those times are gone. Those used to exist, right? I mean, looking on reporting and things like that. We also see that there's an increased adoption of appliances. Not all Oracle appliances, to your comment earlier. Okay, but in general, deploying nowadays solutions become quite complex. How many DBAs do I have in the room? How many system engineers? Okay. So who is everyone else? Developers. Okay. So even if you look at it, and a good comment there is, from a development perspective, what I think you need to look for is a solution that is easy to develop, easy to deploy. Now, if you look at integrating a BI solution with data warehousing, that's quite complex, right? From a Microsoft perspective, and only focusing on the Microsoft tools, you're going to probably use SQL Server reporting services, SharePoint integration, analysis services, build out an analysis services cube, and then do some reporting on it or do some Power Pivot using Office 2010 clients. Okay? If you look at other offerings that are out there, you even might use that with some third party, or your data might be sitting in a third party environment and you do want to move that over to a Microsoft data warehouse, or you want to use the Microsoft BI tools on another vendor's data warehouse solution. Okay, so we're totally aware that that's quite complex to build out and quite complex to build. That's why you have this increased adoption for appliances where you have one box configured, optimized, streamlined to make sure that you can accomplish that need. And of course, with a significant reduced cost, and I'm not going to comment on any cost when I do a presentation in the Netherlands. sorry about that. And increased volumes of data, right? I mean, when I started my career in computing, I was working at a local computer store and I was selling systems where I said, 80 gigabytes hard disk, you're never going to get that full in a lifetime. Right now on my laptop, I have a little bit over half a terabyte. When I go through airport security, I probably have 10 terabytes of data with me on external hard disks. If you look on your storage nowadays, what's your capacity? What do you have? Who's got a data warehouse or a SQL Server implementation that has more than 1 terabyte? Anyone in the room? Okay, quite a couple of people. How much? Okay, more than 10, anyone? Okay, how much? Okay, 20 or 30 terabytes. Okay, so you see that increased volume of data needs to go somewhere, and the fact that many more people start retrieving, analyzing, using that data has a significant impact on query performance and data retrieval. Data quality is another important thing. I'm going to use an example from an internal Microsoft conference, but I'm responsible for the track management, which is the database track. I look at some statistics based on evaluation forms that come in from people that attended the session. And I take my job very seriously, so I look at every single record because I care about data quality. Consistently, my presenter has the highest scores on everything on that session that he presented on. Except for one evaluation, the lowest score possible. There's two things possible, right? Someone doesn't know what the highest score is. Is 5 the highest or is 1 the highest? They might have made a mistake. Or someone might purposely not like the presenter and give him a lower score, right? That's where you're going to care about your data quality. What is your trend amongst your existing data? But also, when did that data come in? If the data comes in before a session is presented, it might be someone took the wrong session. Or it might be that someone intentionally put it in there. Okay, so it's that kind of things that we care about data quality. Another good example of data quality is as soon as you start moving around, you basically get, and I don't know how it is in the Netherlands, but it's definitely the case in Belgium, you get letters sent to you on every potential address you ever lived at. Okay. And that's a problem. And if your name is Dandy, you get some typos in your name, which is very easy if you get a speeding ticket in the Netherlands and they misspell your name because you never get caught. But if you get your name spelled as donkey whatsoever, I don't want to be called donkey, so I care about data quality. Okay. Now, what are the trends in data warehousing by itself? First of all, we did a lot of investment in data warehousing technologies. And as being Microsoft, I have no problem to admit that on some of these technologies, we haven't been agile and flexible and fast enough to implement and to release them. Okay. Column store, which is something that is used by a lot of data warehousing solution vendors, is something that we didn't have in our current product line. So what we did is we grabbed that, and we will be releasing a column store architecture in the next version of SQL Server. One of the areas that some of the data warehousing people have been playing in is massive parallel processing. Now, MPP architecture is nothing new to Microsoft. That's something we did with our high-performance computing for quite a while. Is there anyone in the room already using a data warehouse or a solution that uses massive parallel processing? Okay, a couple. What are you using? Okay, NearView. Good one. Okay. So we'll have a look at some of these and how it's going to map to the Microsoft product stack. Data quality is big of them, and especially an upcoming version of SQL Server, SQL Server Code in Denali, we're doing huge investments when it comes to data quality and data quality improvement. And I'll definitely point you out to some blog posts on that as well. Real-time data warehousing and streaming data. With SQL Server 2008 R2, we released a product that you might not have heard of or not have seen, which is called Stream Insight. What Stream Insight does, it sits directly on your data as it comes in, okay, before it even hits a database or whatever. Good example is, tonight is going to be a big party in Den Haag, right? There's going to be many, many people flowing around and floating around. What if I were to give everyone a tag or an RFID that I could track who's going where? And I want to do real-time analytics on that. Okay, what's the average age and gender of someone that is going to party in Den Haag because there's a national holiday tomorrow? And how many beers are they drinking? And how many of those beers are Belgian beers? Right? Doing that kind of live data and data trend analysis is something that you cannot solve with a current database solution based on a transactional system. Okay, that's where you need different technologies that fit into that area. And even though I cannot really talk about the full details, we are making big investments on working on that real-life data. Banking and financial information is one of them. If you haven't seen the Stream Insight demo presented by one of our product managers called Torsten Grabs, I will make sure that on my blog I put a post on that as well, because the demo is just phenomenal. Doing real-life data analysis directly into an Excel client, connecting to a Stream Insight data source. Okay, and as data passes by, which could be anything, could be financial data, could be coming directly from pharmaceutical, chemical industry, measurements that fly by, you do real-life analysis, and it just floats by. We want to make sure that's secure and robust as well. So security is one of them, and making sure that they have a solid environment on that is going to be key. Now, when we talk about data warehousing, we need to talk about how we scope data warehousing and how we fit that in. Data warehousing is something that the end user should not see or be exposed to. The end user is going to consume a data warehouse in many, many ways, which could be a presentation layer using a web analytical tool or using reporting services or using a fully integrated service where you publish your reporting onto SharePoint, you use Performance Point Services, which is part of SharePoint 2010 now, to look at your scorecards and look at your metrics, analyze key trends and such. All Excel as a client. How many of you have seen a Power Pivot demo and how to pivot on that data? I think Power Pivot by itself is extremely performant and phenomenal in the way you could do client-side data analysis. Billions of records directly managed within an Excel spreadsheet, and even more, you could publish that on SharePoint and expose it to anyone. If you look at the data warehousing scope, you see within the dashed line, that's what data warehousing is. Data warehousing is about storage, having a dedicated storage area, okay? Sharing your OLTP storage with your data warehousing storage, and I know there's a lot of people that do that on a shared SAN, is not the right solution. Okay? Because of workload. A data warehouse workload is very, very different from an OLTP workload. Okay? In the way data is accessed, in the way data is received, in the way data is stored even. Again, back to the point, there should not be an all-up solution where you put everything in one big rock and say, this is my big rock and it will fix everything. We don't believe in rock. The presentation that I do usually on data warehousing is, rock is dead, we have paper and scissors. So long live paper scissors. So, and then of course, how do we get to that data warehouse? Well, we can build out a data warehouse in various ways. We could call and implement what we call a hub and spoke architecture, distributed architecture, because a lot of people have bad experiences with building out hub and spoke. But in a distributed architecture, you could have your central data warehouse centralizing all your data. And what you're going to do is you're going to then offload the data or parts or subsets of your data to an analysis services cube or to an integration services cube. Integration services, and extract it, load it into standard SQL or whatsoever. Now, what are the Microsoft BI and data warehousing offerings? On the data warehousing side, we have a couple of things that we've been working on over the past couple of years that might not have had your visibility. I think everyone knows SQL Server Enterprise Edition. Who doesn't? It's a database product, right? SQL Server Enterprise is typically an SMP-based architecture. Okay, so standard processing, could use it for data warehousing, could use it for OLTP. It's ideal for data marts or small to mid-size data warehouses, enterprise data warehouses. It's a software-only solution. Okay, which basically means you install it on whatever you like. For some people, that might be a NeoView implementation. For others, that might be just a standard server configuration with a dedicated SAN storage as their data warehouse solution. Maximum capacity sizes, tens of terabytes, not hundreds. Okay. What do you do to get it? You just buy SQL Server licensing and you build it out yourself. Correct? Now, other solutions that we did is, you see the Microsoft offering there has a variety. We have what we call a reference architecture and we have some appliances. And what I'm going to focus on is the two level of appliances, one fitting into the SMP space, the other one fitting into the MPP space. And I think it's very important to have that level of offering from an entry perspective, but also from a scale-out perspective. Why would I nowadays go for a full two-rack data warehouse solution that supports up to hundreds of terabytes if my need is only to be 5 terabytes? And I can predict that over the next five years, it might grow to 20, 25, whatsoever. Right? Important there is to understand what your current need is in terms of feature set, in terms of technology, but also where is the Microsoft roadmap going. A data warehouse should not be something that you're going to upgrade every week or every year or every new version release. It should be something that sits for longer than just a single version of a product line. Okay? Why? It's quite costly to upgrade. Well, yeah. In terms of it might be easy in terms of upgrade, but the upgrade or the transfer from data, switching from one platform to the other, or one technology to the other, that upgrade might be very complex when it comes down to handling and dealing with the data. If you keep historical data that's been sitting there for 10 years, I mean, look at a data load process. If you need to load that from one system to the other, that's your biggest issue and that's your biggest time consuming. So very important when building out a data warehouse solution is that you have the right data loading techniques and the right data loading options. And we have a couple. So what else we have? We have, I'm going to start like right here with the fast track data warehousing reference architecture. And we're going to drill down on that and look at what we have. Our fast track data warehousing solution allows you in size to go from 5 terabytes to 80 terabytes. Okay. Keep in mind that the numbers that we specify might be a couple of terabytes off. If I specify the range from 5 to 80, I actually might be able to store 120 terabytes. Or I might only be able to store 60 terabytes. Why would that be? Data compression, okay? And the way we deal and handle with compression. So data compression is very important when it comes to building out a data warehouse. Keep that in mind and don't focus on just storage as your only decision level on what you're going to pick as a data warehouse solution. Okay, it's going to be much more. It might be very easy to determine what you need, or it might be very, very complex. What would be any of the other factors? Concurrency, high availability. How many users are concurrently going to connect to my data warehouse? Another thing is, how many load processes am I going to run on my existing data warehouse while I still have users querying that data warehouse actively? Okay? And it's that load process that probably might become the biggest bottleneck when it comes to querying. Okay? I have an active load process. You don't want your load process to block your querying, which happens a lot with standard data warehousing solutions or deployments. Now, what is FastTrack Data Warehouse? It is a reference architecture in which we work together with all of our hardware vendors, HP, Dell, Bull, NetApp for storage, EMC, Cisco. Every hardware vendor that we work with is involved in determining the right reference architecture. Now, why are we doing reference architectures? Because we don't want you to be a developer, a DBA, a data architect, a data warehousing specialist, and a hardware specialist. We don't want you to go figure out yourself what's the best disk for this rack storage, what are the controllers that I need to have maximum performance. You want to have a balanced system, right? When I talk about the balanced system, I want to make sure that everything is aligned and aligned perfectly in terms of performance. Good comment I got from my wife before we got to the airport. I said, why do you need to have all these shoes with you? Well, I'm taking all these shoes with me because I want to optimize for specific workloads. If you want me to go to a cocktail party, I'm going to go in high heels. If you want me to go hike, I'm going to take my running shoes and things like that. Okay? Different workloads require different components, and it's these components that we do align on our data warehouse reference architecture. So you have a lot of choice there. You could choose your hardware vendor yourself. Now, as a spin-off of that reference architecture, what we did is we also built what we call a business data warehouse appliance. It's a smaller appliance that allows you to implement up to 5 terabytes of data warehousing that allows you to scale up and move over to any of the other technologies later on. But you have your starting environment ready to go in a box. So if you work with, for example, HP as your hardware vendor, what you're going to do is you call HP and said, I want to build a data warehouse solution using a BDW appliance. Once Q. Okay, you don't need to specify, you need to have this controller, I need to have this MSA card, I need to have this switch. It's already done and configured for you. Who did it? Microsoft, together with the hardware vendor. So our engineering team is looking closely onto what is the best, what are the best nowadays components in the market, but also what is the best solution to implement. Okay, very interesting. Now, important there is choice. Personally, I want that choice in hardware. I want to have some flexibility when it comes down to storage as well. What I personally don't want is a single box that says, here's your box. We give you the licensing because you already have existing licenses. And then 5 years later along the road, you're stuck with us in terms of hardware, in terms of hardware vendor, in terms of solution. Okay. So I talked about Enterprise Edition, Standard SQL, Fast Track, Data Warehousing Reference Architecture, and Appliance and SQL Server Parallel Data Warehouse, which is the high-end appliance offering you massive parallel processing. How many of you have seen a presentation on SQL Parallel Data Warehouse before? Okay, one person, good. Now, important to understand is what do you need exactly for a data warehouse? Okay, is it nice to have all the feature set that comes within a product? The answer could be yes, but it also could be no. A data warehouse, in my opinion, is a giant storage environment, and what you're going to do is you're going to optimize your data and your data storage for what purpose? Reporting, analysis, data retrieval. Okay? So if you have an environment where you have very complex store procedures hitting your data warehouse, do you think that's the right solution? Okay? It isn't. Okay? That's important to remember as I advance throughout the slides. So reference architecture, fast track data warehouse, key goal, reduce the amount of DBA efforts. First of all, we don't want to get rid of the DBAs. We still need them. Okay? One of the biggest comments we get from DBAs is, well, if you guys are moving over to the cloud, I'm going to lose my job. No, we definitely need you. We just want to make your life easier. Okay? And more flexible. Choice of hardware when it comes to fast track data warehouse. High scalability and a reduced risk. Okay, what you want to do is everything is aligned in terms of hardware, in terms of best practices, and then you work with your hardware vendors. Now, what does a fast track data warehouse component consist of? Windows Server 2008 R2, SQL Server 2008 R2 Enterprise. So the full SQL Server product line. Now, what are we providing you with? We have configuration guidelines that will tell you this is how you should implement your physical table structure. This is how you should implement and set some certain trace flags on SQL Server. And this is how you should set certain Windows Server settings. Okay, fully done, fully configured. Now, if I look at a data warehousing reference architecture, you can open one up. Okay. Close this one. And I have a data reference architecture that is going to talk about your data warehousing workload, your best practices for that reference architecture, and then point you out to the data sheets of each of the hardware vendors that we work with on those data reference architectures. Okay? So it's going to talk about the components, the changes between our previous edition, and also going to talk about the roadmap and the future. You see, nowadays, there's a lot of requests for, everyone wants to have SSDs, right? The SSD story itself is very interesting in terms of performance and metrics, but again, it should be part of a balanced system, okay? It's easy to say as a hardware vendor, oh yes, we provide a solution with SSDs, but then if you look on the throughput or the capabilities, your CPU doesn't support that amount of data throughput because of the I/O buffers, or your disk controllers don't support it because of your disk I/O cannot support what your SSD can throughput. Okay, so it's very important. That's why you see that a lot of vendors that are using SSDs at this point say, yeah, let's put the flash or the caching on SSD. It is very questionable that you query a data warehouse with huge amounts of data that you're going to be using a lot of caching when it comes to that data retrieval. It all depends on the concurrency. Okay. So fast track data warehouse components consist of recommendations on indexing, consist on the architecture on the hardware is really well defined and signed out. You should buy this if you want the fast track data warehouse. You should buy this server, that network components, and order as a single unit. Looking at some of the reference architecture that we have and the vendors we work with, we have reference architecture with HP, with IBM, with Dell, with Bull, which makes it really interesting, right? We have reference architectures with hardware vendors that are competing with us in the software area on the same technology at times. Why are we doing this? Because Microsoft is not a hardware vendor company, but we like to have the best components of each, and that's we know how to implement SQL Server. Looking at the components, you see you have relatively cheap hardware. Okay, if I go with fast rack architecture, that gives me a storage capacity of 5 to 20 terabytes with a throughput of 3.7 gigs per second maximum. What I have there is I could go for a two proc configuration with a ProLiant DL380, okay, which is a dual G7 question. Very, very good question. Would you apply virtualization? The answer is no. Okay. Now, virtualization is interesting. The answer is no, only if we talk about data warehousing. I would not suggest data warehousing in a virtualized environment because you're going to create bottlenecks in your I.O. You're going to create bottlenecks in your CPU as well. Now, would I use these servers to virtualize OLTP workloads? Absolutely, yes. Okay. We are working on OLTP reference architecture or consolidation appliances that actually allow you to do that. Okay. Again, other thing, consolidation appliance. Full combination of the Microsoft product stack, allowing you to easily deploy and virtualize. I assume you went to some of the sessions around virtualization as well, and you see how easy it is to actually take an existing system and go from physical to virtual using standard Microsoft tools that we ship for free. Okay? If you look at P2V, one of the virtualization tools, you could grab an existing physical machine and virtualizes on Hyper-V2. Of course, if you really care about a good virtualization strategy in terms of patching and manageability, you want to combine that with System Center as well. Okay, and that's exactly what we will do with the consolidation appliances. Looking at the fast rack architecture, we have a data throughput between 10 and 14 gigs a second if you go for the 8 proc configuration. Now, what is important to understand is that the FastTrack architecture is an SMP architecture, okay, which means cheaper, performant enough for the majority of data warehousing workloads, and not the high scalability like we have it with parallel data warehouse. Okay, so that's very important. I'm not going to focus too much on the what's new within FastTrack 3.0 compared to the 2.0. Okay, scalability was one of them. More performance, new configurations with higher I/O throughput, up to 15 gigabytes per second. Typical FastTrack configuration, two proc configuration has a ProLiant with 2x6 core CPUs. The four proc configuration has four 8-core CPUs, and the 8 proc has 8x8 core, which means if you could calculate 64 cores that will be used in your data warehousing solution. You think that's going to address the majority of your query loads? Absolutely, yes. Okay. It might. Okay. But if you look on the storage and scalability, what I tell here is, well, if you need that CPU performance, you have a variety of offerings that you could scale with, but you also have a roadmap I mean, if you look at a FastVec 3 architecture right now, and I'm telling you that you could have 80 terabytes of storage, well, you might need 20 now. Is that 80 terabytes going to be sufficient in the next 5 years? What I need to know is, what can I do with this data warehouse in the next 5 years? And do I strongly believe that in the next 5 years that storage is not no longer going to be the issue? Absolutely. Okay? If you look at the cost of a solid-state disk now, which is what, 400 euros for a 250 gig hard disk, solid-state disk, something like that, right? If you think about it, what if I had physical RAM that would support that? I would almost be able to do my caching or even install smaller data warehouses or OLTP workloads directly into memory rather than doing on a disk. At that point, you're going to talk about many more and much more different data transfer capacities than what you currently have. I did reference the partners. On top of that, we are working with solution partners in terms of implementation. Are there any partners in the room right now? Okay. What we're doing from a readiness perspective, and I could talk about that clearly, we did for our partner an entire global launch readiness training event on our data warehousing strategies. Actually, that's why I'm in Europe for a couple of weeks, and next week I'll be at the training in Munich. So we're training those partners on implementation, and we have very solid partners to go to in terms of assisting you with implementing that solution. So FastVec Data Warehouse, I think I showed you and talked about what it is, what it does, and then we'll have a look at the data warehousing appliances. Now, there's a lot of vendors out there that have appliances, right? If I look at an appliance, it's a pre-packaged, pre-configured, balanced set of hardware. It has servers, networking components, and so on. The difference from a reference architecture is that you have less flexibility in terms of hardware vendor choice, but you have many more options when it comes down to performance. Okay? So what we're doing there is, again, accelerate your time to value. Deploy things in weeks rather than months. If I need to have a massive parallel processing architecture, I can have that ready within the next weeks. If we look at a proof of concept that we do around SQL Server parallel data warehousing generally takes between 2 and 3 weeks, not months. If I look on the customer wins that we have in terms of performance, you see a huge performance increase in terms of querying. We're finalizing all that customer evidence for some of the upcoming conferences and data sheets that we will be publishing because those gains are significant. Now, why are we doing this? To minimize the risk, because we want to make sure the hardware was tested, tuned, and validated, okay? And also to simplify your operations upon it. We now have software partners that validate and certify their products for those data warehousing workloads as well. So the optimized performance is a mix of hardware and software tuned for the workload. Okay, taking an HP architecture, for example, optimized between the hardware and software. Business decision appliance that I talked about comes with Windows Server 2008, SQL 2008 R2, single SKU with expandable capabilities if you need more storage capacity or more backup devices added. If you talk about high availability and failover, question you need to ask yourself is, do I need to fail over my data warehouse? Okay. Might be. If it does, you have the opportunity to do so, but it's not built in by default. Now, SQL Server parallel data warehouse architecture is a totally different animal. Okay. It's massive parallel processing. Let's have a look on what it consists of. The minimal configuration that we have consists of two racks. One is your data rack. The other one is your control MAC. Control rack will have a landing zone, will have backup capabilities, and will manage everything that needs to be managed on an HPC massive parallel processing environment. Okay, patching, service packs, updates, and so on. So that's all managed from the control node. Do we have future plans to reduce that into a smaller rack capacity? Yes, we talk about that. What's the outcome? I don't have a final outcome on what our strategy around that will be, or will. I mean, I'll announce it when that's finalized. So how does it work? Two racks, control rack, data rack. The entire solution is highly available. So it is using clustering. It has several nodes in place. And if I look on my control node, I have an active passive. I have a series of management servers. I have a landing zone, and I have a backup node. What happens there is the data rack consists of a series of compute nodes. Now, how many of you work with SQL Server and linked servers? If you look at SQL Server and linked servers, you kind of offload your data, right? Your data is sitting on another server, and you retrieve it, and your processing is done on one machine before you retrieve it with some query optimizations on the other one. To simplify, you could say this model is very similar. However, the difference is that each of these machines run SQL Server, and they each have their dedicated storage. Okay? Even more, when we look at table design, we have two solutions. We could say we go for a replicated table model, very transparent to the user. You don't have to do anything. You just define it in your data model that you have a table as replicated. And then each of those nodes could work independently with their dedicated storage node. Now, if you use the concept of partitioning in SQL Server, and you partition your data on an SNP architecture by putting your tables using a partitioning function into separate file groups and on different disks and such, you kind of accomplish the same in terms of data distribution, right? But you will never accomplish the same as what we do with parallel data warehouse. Because in a solution where you do have partition tables, your CPU performance is still coming from one single one. Okay? While this one, each of those nodes will work individually to retrieve your data. If I have a user that has a query and the data is stored into the first node, that query will not be impacted by a query that is stored with data sitting on node 7. Okay? And that is key. It's very, very performant and very important. Now, how does it work towards the end user? First of all, the end user doesn't see anything. Okay? There's a separation between the client side and the server side. SQL Server PDW runs everything that you can think of in a network environment in its own private network. Okay? So it runs Active Directory. It needs Active Directory because we use Windows clustering, so Active Directory is key to that. It uses multiple instances of SQL Server, and it runs its own internal IPs in terms of addressing. Can I go to SQL Management Studio and connect to each of those nodes individually? If you attempt or plan to doing that, let me know. I will personally come and slap you on the hands because you're not supposed to. Okay? Everything is managed through the control node and the management servers. Okay? So what is sitting on this side, you should consider that to be a single SQL Server. Okay? Which means that if you apply a patch, that patch management will be done on the management server, and that management server will take care of patching each of the individual components. Okay? Not you. Told you I was going to make the life of my DBAs and system administrator easier, right? Now, what we typically call a PDW node is the combination of a compute node and a storage node. Okay? Looking at our reference architecture, we have 12 nodes. We also have a spare node in case an entire node fails. an entire compute node fails, the other one, the spare one, could be up like right away and take over that storage. Okay, so very unique, very efficient. So the compute node runs SQL Server 2008 Enterprise. SQL Server is a primary interface. You have dedicated hardware, databases, and storage. The streaming? It doesn't support file stream at this point. Okay, that's a good question. I want to be clear and open about that. PDW at this point, version 1, does not support file streaming. It will in the future version, which if I can say, that's on a very short roadmap. But it's, yeah, I'll be very open about that question. If I look on the compute node hardware options, it's pre-configured. Each of them run their instance of SQL on the compute node. Okay? Drives are configured by default as a RAID 1 to avoid appliance failover from a single drive failure, which means that each of those compute nodes has high availability built in. Okay? Each of those also has its own TempDB. Why would that be? It has its own SQL Server instance. It has its own system databases. You are not going to touch those. Okay? And yeah, that's kind of, I need to keep my hands off and it does everything for me. The key reason is we use an ultra-shared nothing architecture. Okay? A lot of hardware vendors will talk about shared nothing. This is ultra-shared nothing. Because what we can do, if I look at this compute node, okay, let's say I have a table that I need in all of my queries, okay, which could be a dimension table or a fact table that might be shorter whatsoever. What I could do is I could store and replicate those on each of the nodes. Let's give an example. I have data distribution based on geographical region, okay. Let's do Belgium, Netherlands. What I can say is that all the data for Belgium is set and distributed on node 1, and all data for the Netherlands is set and distributed on node 4. However, some of the data that I need is exactly the same and is used against queries with a join. If I use an architecture in which I still have shared components, what would happen is if this node is frequently queried, the query performance of this node will go down if I join with a table that is sitting on any of the other nodes. Right? That's clear? So that's what I can do, is I can replicate that table. Now that's the key difference between SQL Server SMP versus SQL Server MPP. If you want to do this on SQL Server, yes, you can replicate a table, but it's not done automatically for you. You would have to enable replication, and still you would have to write your queries in such a way that they go to the local table rather than going to another table. And you would have to create your own instances of SQL Server to accomplish that. Okay? Well, here it's done for you. What about client components? You're going to connect to PDW from a client perspective, yeah, like you connect from anything else. So what happens is every client connection will go through the control node. There's no persistent user data. And then the processing that will send that to the from the control node to the actual compute node will benefit from everything that SQL Server has. Execution plan caching. Looking at the providers, we support ODBC, OLEDB, JDBC, ADO.NET and such to actually connect to PDW, and we have drivers available for as well, 32-bit and 64-bit. Now, one of the other things that is very important is a lot of people think, oh, I have this data warehouse. Let me build a giant cube on it. Again, I will come and personally slap your hands if you do so. and then do reporting on the cube, right? That would work in a distributed architecture, and it's recommended in a distributed architecture, but you could skip this step if you have a central data warehouse, because SQL Server reporting services will allow you to go directly to that data warehouse. So no need to create a cube on top of the data warehouse. You could actually go and retrieve the actual data. Now, how does it get managed? You manage it by connecting to the management console. Okay, it's not SQL Server Management Studio. Okay, why? Because we didn't want it to be that way. Question. Oh, we'll get there. Yeah, we will use SSIS for data load. However, we'll have several different options for data load. So you connect to the administrative console, and I'm going to show you that. Then when I have a query gets sent from the client application to the control node, will execute on each of your nodes, and will then be returned to the control node to the actual client application. Okay? Do you benefit from caching? Yes. You have caching at many levels. You have caching right here on your roll-up results set on your control node, but you have the individual SQL caching that is sitting on each of those individual SQL instances. Okay? What if I have multiple queries? Well, same thing is, you will go through that control node, and the performance will be amazingly fast. I like that better than blazingly. When you run it in that ultra-shared nothing architecture, because of the fact that I can replicate tables. Now, how does this work? Okay. Looking at the nodes, I identified for you the control node and the PDW node, which is a combination of the compute node and the storage node. I also have the management server, okay, that's going to do the maintenance and patch management on each of those servers individually, because each of those run Windows servers, each of those run SQL. Okay. I also have a backup node, a landing zone, and a management server. The backup node is directly attached to the data warehouse, which means, woohoo, very performant backup, and I could then integrate that with a third-party solution. Now, you mentioned data load. How am I going to load the data into PDW? Can I use SSIS? Absolutely. Do I have other options? Yes. When you care about loading large volumes of data, where do you want that data to come from, and where do you want it to go to? Bring it as close to the destination. Okay? So what I suggest is you have a series of raw data files. You have an export from whatever. Bring that as close to your data store, because the closer you can bring it to your appliance, the faster your data load process will go. Okay? To bring it there, work with a dedicated landing zone. If I work with this dedicated landing zone here, what I can do is I can upload my data onto that landing zone, and then from there, kick it off and load it into PDW. Okay? The concept used there is the same concept as using staging tables in a normal SSIS process. Okay? Consider that landing zone to be a dedicated node that you're going to use for staging purposes. Why? Because this landing zone and those compute nodes are connected using dual InfiniBand. Okay? Giving you maximum data load performance. There's no interruption. They're sitting on their own private network, and nothing will interfere on the network with that process by itself. Okay? So that's key. Management server support and patching. Runs Windows domain controller, so it runs Active Directory. I told you we need a domain controller for high-performance computing. And it also holds images in case a node needs to be re-imaged. In case a compute node needs to be re-imaged. Okay? So what you can do at that point is you can redeploy. Now, when you look where the metadata is sitting, there's going to be metadata sitting on that control node, and there's going to be metadata sitting in each of those individual compute nodes. Configuration Manager for PDW allows you to look at the appliance topology, look at the server status, and so on. Okay, and then I could view all that within my PDW management console. I'm going to take you there in a minute. So the landing zone itself, as I said, is used for ETL purposes, and that's exactly where you want to go. There's two ways of loading data. Okay, the key goal is to provide high capacity storage for data files. It's connected to the internal network, and you could see that as a sandbox environment that allows you to run scripts on that internal network and fast data loads. If you care about data load processes, what you want to do is you want to unify your data in such a way that you have data cleaning and everything in place. I mean, if I have pure and clean data, what's the best way to load it? BCP, I mean, how many of you use BCP commands in SQL? Okay. SSIS is not always the best solution. Okay. I would say that BCP loads faster than SSIS because it's a pure data pump. Now, you don't have all the transitions and all the complexity that you could put into SSIS, the lookup capabilities and so on. But if you care about loading large amounts of data from one source to the other, on standard SQL, you would use BCP. On PDW, you would use a dedicated data loader. So from your source, you're going to copy over those files or source data to the landing zone, okay? Which could mean that if I have an Oracle database and I want to take that data, put it into a SQL Server data warehouse, what I can do is I could use SSIS to get it from Oracle, store it on my landing zone, and then pump it into PDW. Okay? Which probably is going to be best practices, right? If I am a... I could use SSIS for that. I cannot use... For the last part, I will use the dedicated DW loader that sits on PDW. For the reference architecture, I could use either BCP or I could use SSIS. Good question, though. Now, for the last part, if I need to do more transformations rather than just pumping the data, of course I can use SSIS on that part. But my recommendation would be everything you put on that Zen landing zone should almost be ready to go and load into that data warehouse. So from that landing zone, I could use DW Loader, which is the massive parallel processing version of BCP, and I could then load it into PDW. So what I do is my load interface will store my data onto the landing zone, and we'll then load it into PDW, and I can load that in a star schema or normalized data, whatever you feel like. I also talked about data backup, and data backup could be combined with a corporate backup solution. Now, if you look at PDW in terms of SKU and ordering, what you can do is basically the only option. How many data racks do you want? And what's the size of your backup solution? Okay? That size of the backup solution is going to be important in terms of data recovery in case something happens or you need to revert, right? Probably from that backup node solution, you're going to then offload it to a corporate backup solution. Okay? So integration with any backup solution you might have. Okay, I talked about data loads and data layout approaches. By default, a table will be distributed across the multiple nodes, or I could specify that I have a replicated table, and that's something you basically specify when you create a table structure. If you specify distributed table, you could point it out that it will distribute. If you specify replicated, it's going to replicate across each of those nodes. So that gives us a ultra-shared nothing architecture, in which you could combine your distributed tables with your replicated tables to make sure that there's no interference with any other processes when you're querying data with filtering on your distribution. Is that clear? Perfect. So the ultra shared nothing architecture pushes the shared nothing architecture into each of those SNP nodes and assigns I/O CPU affinity to it. You have much faster query performance. You will distribute your larger table, replicate the smaller ones, and you could redistribute rows as needed as well. So you will have a look at that. If you look on a typical star schema data layout, I could have my dimension tables and I could have my facts tables. What I can do is the dimension tables, I could say, oh, you know what? I'm not going to use distribution on those. Or I might use a replication model. So what will happen is my facts table, on the facts table, I will use distribution because that's my largest table and I'm going to distribute and using the right distribution key. So what will happen in that architecture is I could then replicate the tables across each of those nodes, which giving me my ultra-shared nothing architecture.
And these are all people decisions you have to make.
Those are data warehouse design decisions that you need to make. So with PDW, you get like a full support service as well. It basically is you need a data architect that does understand massive parallel processing and the distribution mechanism there. That's important. It's part of your data design. Do we have tools? We have certain tools that are used by our MCS consultants, but we don't have like a best practices tool that analyzes your data and then distributes it. So you're putting me in. It's a loaded question, in my opinion. Which I mean is, do we have tools that could analyze your source data and then say what the best distribution is or whatsoever? Yes, we do. Are they dedicated to PDW? No, not really. Software architecture, the way you're going to approach this is your data access is ODB, ODBC, ADO.NET, JDBC. You connect to the MPP engine coordinator, which runs on the control node. And then from there, you PDW appliance will take care of authentication, schema management, TemDB, data movement services between the backup mode and the landing zone, and then data movement between the nodes as well. In case you have updates on your distribution, that distribution will then be relayed to one of the different nodes. Okay, so managed by the SNP architecture. Now, how does that work in terms of PDW? So what you see here is the PDW landing page, which is sitting on my management console. What I can see there is my appliance architecture, the number of sessions, the number of queries that I'm running, backup restore, and the general state of my appliance. If there's a memory problem, you're going to see that on the appliance. If there's a compute node failing, you're going to see that on the appliance. If there's a query load process, you could look at that query load process and see how it performs, what distribution it does across the multiple nodes, and you can also see what happens when someone is retrieving data. Okay, on data retrieval, you're going to see the distinct separation between what goes from a session to each of those individual compute nodes. Looking at a session, every session will be identified by session ID. So what I can do is I could go to my session. I can look at my queries. If I look on the query, I see I have a query ID, which was a select statement. I can look at the data loads and say, okay, I had a database table line item that I loaded. What was my process? Was it a load, a reload? Was it a partial reload or not? Backup and restore, I could see it within the console when I took the last backup. Looking at the appliance status, I could see each of my nodes, which is separated between the control nodes and each of the individual compute nodes. I could see that this one is flagged as a passive node. So that is a compute node. That's my spare compute node that is sitting ready, waiting to fail over if something goes wrong with any of the other nodes. I could see status on, is my cluster okay? Is my cooling okay? Is there a problem with processing? Is there a problem with internal storage on each of those or whatsoever? Okay. Now, if I look on the alert system with PDW, and by the way, we are building a management pack for PDW that allows you integration with our existing tools. What I can look is I can see, oh, there's an alert, there's a disk array alert, there's a warning. Warning state here says degraded. I might have a degraded performance load or whatsoever. And then I could look at the actual processing. Oh, it's a non-critical memory. Okay. Basically says the memory module is present, but it reports one of the following condition. Oh, you added new memory. It has been upgraded. Or the memory does not match the memory modules with the other modules within the bank, which might be based on, oh, you have a different serial number, or you have a slightly different a latency in memory processing between each of the modules that you added, which means someone didn't do a great job when you added memory, or memory was added to each of those nodes. I could see that information into the Windows event log. It will integrate within that, but I identified that one to be a non-critical alert. If you look on the dashboard itself, a question you need to ask yourself is, if this were to be Windows Performance Monitor, System Monitor, and you want to monitor what the performance is on each of those nodes, what you would do is you would set a system monitor that has counters on memory, disk I/O, query performance on each of those, right? How does that work with PDW? You'll see that each of my nodes is identified in the graph to monitor. I could see my compute nodes and I could see my control nodes. I can also see my logical disk on each of those. So what I see here is in my logical disks, I have my compute nodes, I have my control node, I have my landing zone, and I have all these different compute nodes here, right? Control note is seems to have a lot of disk reads and writes, and I see individual querying disk I/O access on each of those compute nodes. Okay, why do I only see I/O on some of them? Because I have distributed data, correct. If I look on the dashboard options, I could then look at the graphs that I do want to monitor there. Okay, and I could skip through them. Now, looking at the query tool, I could create a database and say, okay, I create a database, auto grow option, replicated size, distributed size. That's in terms of gigabytes. And we do have recommendations on that. If I then run a query, I could see that my query that I executed, the create table statement is right in there. I could see the option. I could actually look at the query text that was part of it. Okay, now look what I did. Create database statement. That's all I specified. If you then look at the breakdown on the query plan associated with that, you will see that that entire query plan as you have it here has that create database on primary file group distribution. So that's automatically done by PDW. It distributes it for you. Okay, because you specified that's how I'm going to create my database. So it then breaks that out across the multiple nodes. And that's what I think is unique and ease of management when it comes to it. Okay, you see that actually it uses global unique identifiers to actually create those files. There's nothing you need to do as a DBA to manage that. Okay, and you shouldn't. So much easier. If I then create a table, I could specify that I have a table with distribution, and I could specify my distribution, then set my distribution values. It will then distribute that across all of the nodes that I do have based on my distribution value specified. Now, when I look on my create stable statement, I see that coming back into my query tool as well. And I can look at the text. You will see that I have my query statement right in there with the difference distribution. Okay. What it does in the background, it uses those internal databases with those weird names and does a create partition function. So it sets all those create partitions and everything as part of that process. Questions? That's a good question. When I form a query and I send that out over the control node, how much of that processing is done by the control node and how much of that processing is done by the compute node? That's your question, right? What's the answer? The majority of the processing is done by the compute node. Okay. Why? Because that's where your distribution sits. That's where your data sits. So retrieving that is done by the compute node and not by the control node. Now, otherwise, you would have the wrong design. Otherwise, you would need more control nodes than you would need compute nodes. The control node will make up the overall plan on where to go to, but it's the each of the compute nodes that will calculate the individual query plans. I think I could sample that. Now, if you look on integration, you'll see that we could fully integrate PDW with a load process. So you could do a data flow task, set a data source, and then set a PDW destination. So it comes with a connector for SSIS. Okay. As you install the PDW client tools, you will have that in there. Looking at the connection manager, I could then specify what I want to do with the load of my table. Am I going to create a new destination table? Am I going to append? Or am I going to reload an additional table? So you have those options. You have those options available. So I could then say, like, okay, I have a PDW destination. I'm going to load my table line item. Okay. Specify my status, whether it's a full load or I'm going to append to the existing table. Okay, if it's a reload, it wipes out everything that's in there, and I could then perform my actual data load. Looking at how it goes, I could easily load hundreds and thousands of rows using that connector. And I could see that load process coming back into my management console as well. Okay. So what you see that from the load process, it actually uses a staging area on the landing zone, and then the DMS load service will load and distribute it across your multiple nodes. Key advantage of that is you have no interference with any of the existing query processes. So it's totally run as a separate process, which means if I look onto my dashboard, I could see the execution on each of those individually. And I could then see my CPU time on each of those. So you'll see that I have my compute nodes, and I have my landing zone, and I have my distribution. As I load this distribution table, I could then specify that and see how the distribution goes on each of those nodes. Now, this distribution here, you see, based on the variety and data and the distribution across the data that I have it in there. And you could easily go through this and look at the actual number of reads, number of writes as you step through this. Questions? I think we're close to running out of time, so I do want to open this up for questions now. No questions? Okay. Some comments and things you need to know about PDW. Yeah, PDW, Massive Parallel Processing Architecture, okay? We looked at the alignment with PDW. I can implement the Microsoft Data Warehousing solution using FastRack, using PDW. I have a very flexible business capability. I can also use a database copy technology that says from PDW I can offload to a parallel data warehouse, from PDW to a fast track reference architecture and build out a hub and spoke architecture. Okay. If there's any questions that might come later in terms of the full integration within the Microsoft BI stack, keep in mind that PDW has connectors for SSIS. It has a connector for your client applications, which means you could also directly connect from Power Pivot and query that data or SQL Server reporting services. I'm actually working with our Germany team now on a PDW demo that's going to show you all those capabilities and come up with the actual numbers of records that refit in seconds. Okay. So, there's no questions. I think we are out of time. There's some SQL Server 2008 R2 giveaways in the back. If you didn't pick up anything yesterday, feel free to do now. And I thank you for your time in the session. Thank you.